Hi, everyone. I'm with Bhavani Twala. She's with the Center for Applied Legal Studies at the University of Witwatersrand in Johannesburg in South Africa. There at the center, she has been keeping a close watch at the emergence of BRICS. BRICS, of course, is this new bank, the BRICS Bank, which has been created by Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. These are the five countries which have taken lead, being the new emerging economic powers of the world. I think a good way to start would be if you can tell us a little bit about what your understanding of BRICS is, how it came about, and the process that has been underway in South Africa. So can you tell me a little bit about BRICS Bank, first of all, and then about what your concerns are about it in South Africa?
Hi, Philo. Thank you. As you've rightly said, the BRICS Bank was formed by Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, the developing economies of the global south. And they've come together to create this bank so that they can provide development funding for infrastructure in their own countries and in the countries of other developing economies. So I think the rationale from that is basically that they want to have control over their own development. They want to be able to develop stuff without being dependent on financing from, say, financing from the West. So they've come together to create this, and I think it's a great initiative in that they're taking control for their own development. But we will see what comes from it. I think your other question was, how has the process been in South Africa?
That's right, yeah.
So in South Africa, the process of ratification, they haven't taken it to Parliament yet to be discussed, so it hasn't been ratified yet. So until all the countries ratify, then only can the BRICS Bank come into operation.
Was there any prior consultation, or was this just something that the leaders came and told the country that we are going to do it? Was there any public participation or conferences before the idea came into being?
No. In fact, there is no actual public participation. Well, there is public participation, but it's very, very limited in that the public can only participate at the point in which, so after the treaty goes to the National Assembly, it then goes to select committees and standing committees for discussion. So at those standing committees and select committees meetings on the treaty, the public is allowed to attend the meetings and listen, but they can't really say anything or contribute anything.
Right.
And even then, what comes from those meetings is just a memo that it will be attached to the recommendation, and then it's still up to the National Assembly whether they decide to accept it or not and to ratify it. So there isn't really anything, like the public doesn't really have much say in this whole process.
Right. Now, obviously, that has huge implications for transparency, because out of the five countries that are part of BRICS, three have recognizable democratic governments: South Africa, Brazil, and India. China and Russia do not have that. And that itself means that in terms of public accountability, there are serious questions. Now, you started out by saying that it's a good thing that the developing South or the global South is kind of, you know, regaining control over the levers. At the same time, there are concerns worldwide that this might lead to diminishing international human rights standards, such as the IFC performance safeguards or World Bank guidelines on resettlement. So at a very crude level, people think that this is a bank created by the southern nations so that they don't have to meet international standards. Do you share that concern? Do you think that's a worrisome issue?
I don't really share that concern. I think my concern is that in the articles of agreement, they haven't really said much about, you know, they haven't worked in that human rights language into, for example, reasons or like into their operational principles, things like that. So until and unless they start, they come together and start creating their policies, which is when we'll be able to interact with the bank and see whether or not they're going to have human rights standards or not. I can't really say that. I'm not of the view that these countries are coming together so that they can avoid human rights standards. I think that historically, the Global South has been dependent on the West for financing, and that in itself has led to economic regression in Africa, in South America. And I think that this is actually a good thing. If anything, it may be of concern, but it's not one that I would say is on the top of my list in terms of concerns.
So what would be one on your top list of concerns? One would be, of course, transparency of the process within South Africa. What else do you would you like to see?
Well, what I would like to see is in South Africa, we have at CALS currently, we're working on what is known as the Johannesburg Principles. So these principles are basically norms and standards that we want banks to adopt. So these standards, for example, show banks how to incorporate the protection and promotion and respect of human rights in their business. So banks in themselves have power, right? So if, for example, a company wants to get a loan to finance a project that they're working on, the banks have control over the fact that they have borrowed that company money. Gives them some sort of control over the operations of that bank.
Right.
So we give advice. Yes. So part of the principles is that we then say, you know, put certain conditions on a loan that you have to respect human rights in order for us to keep funding you. And then we say we say that they should give that money out in stages. So for example, give out a certain part of the loan. If a loan is 100,000 rand, break it up into four and have review periods. So we'll give it out the first quarter and we'll give you the 25,000 and then see if you're still complying. If you're not complying, you know, we can say we're not going to give you any more money. And in that way, banks can actually influence the acceptance of human rights standards, the promotion and protection and respect of human rights standards in project finance. So that's the kind of thing that I would like to see in this bank as well. Like I said, their articles don't really incorporate much human rights standards or human rights language. They say nothing actually very about human rights. You know, the standards in and of themselves are typically what we see in business is that, you know, no one thinks that business has anything to do with human rights. And I think especially as countries which historically have been subject to what I said earlier about how the economic progression and the socioeconomic effects of the loans which have been given to the Global South, it's very important that we make sure that the banks that come from us, you know, we don't end up doing to ourselves what the West has done to the Global South. So, yes, that's what I would like to see. I would like to see it incorporated into their policies, into their agreements. And we will, of course, wait and see if South Africa will be pushing for that kind of thing or not, and what we as civil society can do.
Excellent. Thank you very much indeed. This is very useful. All the best with your work.